On today's episode of The Good Word, the great J.A. Adande joins us to discuss the Ant-Man snatching the torch, what the Suns should do about Kevin Durant, and are the Nuggets showing some worrying signs against the Lakers? All that and more on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Monday. I am in Denver for game 5 of the Lakers-Nuggets series. I fully did not expect to be here at all, folks. I did not expect to be here at all. Then I forgot that Saturday night was after Friday night, which meant the Nuggets had a Friday night in L.A. L.A. is undefeated on a Friday night, which meant no better person to join me today than J.A. Adande. He's now the director of sports journalism at Northwestern University Medill School of Journalism, where, of course, he was a graduate. He, along with Michael Wilbon, there's a great story about me, Michael Wilbon, and the J.W. Marriott at L.A. Live that I will tell J.A. after the show. But before we even get started with the playoffs, J.A. Adande, of course, who does, you know, still does ESPN Around the Horn, J.A. always sends like the random Stevie Wonder videos on YouTube from like live shows in the 70s. And it always makes me think, why the hell couldn't I have seen Stevie Wonder like in full prime? Like I saw him, I think 2014, the Songs in Key of Life tour, and that was incredible. But I would have loved to have seen prime Stevie, like while he was still making the music and then on tour at the same time. Like, I just feel like I just missed a big chunk of like music history.
The thing with those clips from the early 70s that somehow, like every once in a while, the Instagram algorithm just like gets right in your zone. And like, if somehow I've been in the live Stevie clip zone, keep sending my way, Instagram algorithm. I got a funny...
And they can probably hear you right now, Jay, believe it or not.
Yeah, I'm sure they listen to everything. So, you know, in those early 70s, he's like literally finding his voice. And like, it's like when you see like a giraffe or a deer, you know, realize like, hey, I got 4 of these legs and I can walk on them. And you can see he's just having fun experimenting with the power of his voice. Realize like, man, I got this like incredible instrument that I can work with and expand and just change sonically and have so much fun with. You know, I first saw him live in the mid 90s. He played in DC on that Natural Wonder tour where he had the orchestra backing him. It was a pretty cool tour. He did a Hollywood Bowl show with a live orchestra too. Mm. But yeah, that wasn't like this version of Stevie. You know, by then he was settled in. Right. You know, it's interesting. I saw him. So after he did that Songs in the Key of Life tour, they did the one where he did Talking Book and Inner Visions, did full albums for both of those. And it was interesting to me, like you can debate which one is better, but I just know in concert, and maybe it's just because of the nature of that concert, but when they got to Inner Visions, they did Talking Book, then they took a break and they did Inner Visions. And when it just started off like with Too High, they were just in such a groove. And I don't know if it was just because, you know, they were like fully into the flow or if it was because where he was at when they made that album, right? But just the way it sounded, man, they were just like, oh, okay, we in the groove right now. I told Steph Curry once, he wasn't as up on his Stevie Wonder as you and I, but I said, Steph, your first MVP season was like Talking Book and your second one was like Inner Visions, where you had just been established and you just picked up right where you left off and took it to a new level.
That's a really good comparison. If we were to do player seasons, we might have to do that. I might have to bring you back in the summer where we
player
just
seasons
do
his albums. I haven't thought about this further, but to me, Steph's back-to-back MVP seasons, the first one was Talking Book, the second one was Inner Visions.
See, I would think that you would say the second one would be Songs in the Key of Life just because it was so much excess. Not even excess, like it wasn't needed. I don't want people to think that Songs in the Key of Life wasn't necessary, but Inner Visions was just tighter. Inner Visions might have been 10 tracks. You know what I mean? Talking like those albums that Stevie had before Songs in the Key of Life were like 10 tracks, 9 tracks. Like, it was like a tighter composition. Then Songs in the Key of Life came out, and that's like 25. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, literally, if you think of your favorite Stevie Wonder song, it's probably on Songs in the Key of Life.
Yeah.
But Songs in the Key of Life is not my favorite album.
As
is my favorite song of all time.
It's interesting. So I got to know Greg Fillinganes, who is a keyboardist from Detroit, I think. He was young. He was like in his early 20s, maybe even a teenager when Stevie, you know, caught wind of him. And so he played on the Songs of the Key of Life album. And the way he explained that explosion, that masterpiece, that overabundance of great songs, he just said he just had that much music in him. You know, like, very few people have that many great songs in their entire life.
Right.
And Stevie just had that sitting in him to produce that masterpiece double album, coming on the heels of the other great albums that we talked about. He just had that much music in him.
Someone needs to do a documentary on Songs in the Key of Life. I need to hear
It's already been done. Well, there was there's like a making of, and you can see it's on YouTube.
I thought I saw something, but I couldn't find it. Like, something was made maybe like 2016. Like, I did some type of IMDb search and I couldn't like find exactly what it was, but I saw like a Rolling Stone sort of oral history. And I was like, no, I need more of this.
No, there's real time recordings of them in the studio making Songs of Kid Life.
Man,
I have a VHS tape of it somewhere.
You need to convert that while it's still good. You need to send that out to one of them things. Look, Stevie said that, you know, true love asks for nothing. Her acceptance is the way we pay. That is the most beautiful. I ain't never been like in that level of like love before. But if I was, it better feel like that. It better feel like 8 times 8 times 8 is 4. It better not make sense. 8 times 8 can't be 4. You know, 8 times 8 times 8 times 8 is 4.
Right.
Like, that, it doesn't make sense, but it makes all the sense in the world. You know, the sun denies itself and all that stuff. Man, just go look up. If, for those who don't know, like, yeah, we getting into all the playoffs. Dolphins fly and parrots live at sea. Till we dream of life.
That's how long I'm going to be loving you. In other words, like, it's never going to end. Because these things are never going to happen. Dolphins are never going to fly. Parrots are never going to live at sea. But if that ever happens, maybe that's when the end of my love for you will cease.
Exactly. Dude, and this is a man who couldn't see. Well, he know what a dolphin look like. Well, he know what a parrot look like. You know what I mean? Maybe he does. Maybe he can visualize it. I think he can see shapes. I'll just say that. I don't think Stevie is completely blind. I think he can see shapes. Maybe not colors, but he can see shapes. I'm willing to give him that.
If you go through my social media a few years ago, I posted the video of him shooting a free throw.
Really?
It did not go well.
Okay.
It made Shaq look like Steph Curry at the line.
Well, then, I mean, that debunks that theory. But Inner Visions might be my favorite Stevie Wonder album, because it was just tight. It was nothing. It was like literally no skips in that one. That was after he got into the bad car accident. Too High, Visions. Just go through Stevie's classical period of the 70s, and it feels like Michael Jordan in the 90s. That's what it feels like. That's the no greater thing I could compare it to.
The Imperial Zone. He was in that zone.
But speaking of Michael Jordan, we don't necessarily have to talk about Jordan, but we can talk about a guy who looks like him, right? Because Anthony Edwards has announced his candidacy for torchbearer of the NBA. He snatched that shit from Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns last night. Like I'm of the school, J.A., and I don't usually take the Shaq-isms. I know you love Shaq. Shaq is like, the best way to show the respect is to show no respect. And that's actually what Anthony Edwards did last night. He took it to Brad Beal. He took it to Book. He took it to his man's KD. It was beautiful to see the new generation, or the representative of the new generation, snatch the mantle and say, this is going to be my league. It may not be his championship this year. I doubt that it is. But he's saying, this is going to be my league. And I just felt like it was so symbolic. Like, do we have moments? I don't know if we even have moments like that where one star takes it from another star and we just don't see it coming.
I mean, Jordan taking it from Magic in 91.
But wasn't Mike already the league's best player for a few years? But you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, but he wasn't the champion. Yeah.
No, right.
So, you know, Magic and Larry still ran, and it's funny because in Magic's mind, it didn't end until the next summer at that fabled practice session with the Dream Team. But, you know, in 91, there were still doubts that because it hadn't been done. You hadn't seen a player lead the league in scoring and lead his team to a championship in the same year for like 15 years or something, right? There were still doubts about if you could do it Michael Jordan's way.
Right.
Could you be such a volume scorer and still lead your team to a championship? You know, could so much of the offensive production come from one player and leave enough for you to have the components of a championship team? So there were still doubts. So he still had to prove it. It was still Magic and Larry's league until further notice. And the further notice arrived in June of 1991. You know, it's hard to arrive in April. You know, we're not even to May yet. So, you know, I always say you got to do it past Memorial Day. That's when it really matters. Like with Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, he won two MVPs, but he hadn't played really past Memorial Day, you know, not counting the bubble, which was technically after Memorial Day.
Right.
You know, if you know, in a normal calendar, it wouldn't have been past Memorial Day. He kept getting bounced, right? But then once he did it, won that championship, beat the Phoenix Suns, and you know, now you saw him starting to get all the endorsements and he really became a face of the league, which right. He hadn't been despite winning. Same with Jokic, right? Multiple MVPs. Now you see him in the commercials, right? He's not a good friend in those commercials, by the way.
No.
Right? I'm like, he's a terrible friend. But now he's doing those Despicable Me commercials. Like
right.
Now he is a face of the league. Why? Because he won a championship. So Anthony Edwards is not ready to become a face of the league. Jordan was exceptional in that he really did become a face of the league before he won the championship, but it just went to a new level. Wins the championship 91, the Be Like Mike commercials come out that summer, and the Michael Jordan as like we've come to know him started that year. Maybe, you know, we're going to look at Anthony Edwards differently. They won a playoff series, you know, the first time that franchise won a playoff series in 20 years. Mm-hmm. So we can look at him differently. We can look at Cat differently, right?
No, we don't.
Cat had never done anything.
No, we don't have to look at Cat differently. We don't.
He's been out of first round of playoffs. Maybe, you know, he rode along with Anthony Edwards, but he's been out of first round of playoffs. What I thought was interesting was after the game, and they're in the press conference, they're sitting next to each other. I think I know which room they were in Phoenix, because like it was pretty tight in there.
Yeah.
I'm like,
oh yeah.
They're using that same room for the playoffs.
Yep.
But they're sitting next to each other. There's a question for Cat, and Anthony Edwards takes the question, which normally could be troublesome, but he spent the entire time talking about how important Karl Anthony Towns was. And he was mm-hmm. like, we mm-hmm. need you. I've been telling him, stop, you know, taking those MFing stupid fouls, and because we need you on the court. You got to stay out of foul trouble. And then he went on to extol all of the things that Karl Anthony Towns does for them and just really pub them up. So he took his time. But he spent that time, you know, hyping him up. And it seemed like Cat didn't mind. And I think that's really critical going forward, because it seems like Karl Anthony Towns is the type who could really get in his feelings if all the attention is going elsewhere when he was like, hey, I used to be the guy here. But it doesn't seem like it's bothering him that Anthony Edwards is getting all the glory. And that bodes well for how this team can move forward.
Look, I think he learned that lesson when he dealt with one Jimmy Butler. And he learned to get out of the way of the New World Order. Okay. Look, and this ain't Jimmy Butler. Like, Ant is a different type, and Ant is a little more endearing. And I'm the exact quote, and maybe John will put the sound in, where he basically said, hey, you know, you need to stay out of foul trouble. You're the most offensively talented player on the team. Like, he's pumping him up and holding him accountable at the same time and doing it gently. You know what I mean? Like, there's a way to communicate. That's a certain level of savvy, I guess. But it wasn't like Ant was trying to execute the savviness. Ant was just being Ant. You know what I mean? And that, to
You're
me...
You're right. It didn't feel calculated.
No, it didn't.
But it was very effective.
It was really, really, effective. And I don't know how far Minnesota can go this year, because I feel like they're playing better. They may not be better than Denver, but they're playing better than Denver. Denver's like sputtering right now. We'll get to them later. But Minnesota is Minnesota has reached a point, at least in that series, they reached a point where they were like, this team ain't that good. We're better than them. Like, they're trying hard to do things that we're doing easy. And once they got through that point, they were like, okay, let's put these boys away. Because Ant didn't force his game early. I don't think he got his first field goal until either late in the first quarter or sometime in the second quarter, and he finished with 40. And that just showed me that he recognized, oh, this is time for me to take over the game. It's time for me to realize that none of these guys can stop me. And that's what brings us to the Phoenix Suns, J.A. Because this is a team. J.A., we talk about positionless basketball, right? That shit don't actually exist. You need a point guard, and you need somebody to protect the rim. Everything else might be quote-unquote positionless, but you need those two elements. And Phoenix had everything in the middle and nothing on the outside, right? That's like cream filling with no Oreo. You need the actual Oreo cookie there to chew on. And I've never seen a team, J.A., not be quick enough and be outsized at the same time. And they're old and they're expensive. I don't see where they go from here short of, hey, KD, where do you want to go?
It's hard when they're built on a flawed premise. Mm-hmm. And they assembled a big three without really thinking about what it is that a big three is supposed to provide. And when the Heat did their big three, to me, the whole foundational principle was that you had multiple guys who were capable of being the best player on the floor, right? And it wasn't about, oh, we're just going to overwhelm you. It's that, no, you know, we can have maybe LeBron one night, maybe it's Wade one night, maybe it's Chris Bosh one night. As we came to find out, it really wasn't Chris Bosh on any nights, but right. Yet he became a really super deluxe role player, right? Vital to what they did and did help them to go positionless, right? But you can go positionless when you have your forward is basically an all-time great point guard, right? Which is right. What LeBron James was. But the thing is, it's supposed to be that, like, okay, yeah, you can take turns, all other things being equal, and one guy goes off and can be, you know, it gives you three shots at having the best player on the floor. The way the Suns were built, they have three guys who need to max out in order for them to have a shot, right? Those guys had to go for like 75, 80 points a game. You know, like it wasn't enough for just one to have a great game. We saw it. Devin Booker had a great game, or great scoring output at least, in game four, but that wasn't enough to help them win. And the way a big three is supposed to be built is that if you have that one guy go off like that, that puts you over the top. But everything else keeps you in the mix. And then you have that one guy that's that difference maker that puts you over the top. So just the way that they're built, it was a flawed big three premise. And as you said, it lacked these fundamental components, which they had before: a great point guard, Chris Paul, and kind of a traditional big man, right? Like DeAndre.
It felt like it was moves that they felt like they had to make. They had to get off of Chris Paul. They were going to get off of DeAndre. And those relationships had soured. They had fired Monty Williams. Like, in vacuums, you understand the logic behind certain decisions, but it was like none of the decisions were made in concert.
Did you have to get off DeAndre Ayton if you moved Monty Williams? Because the problem was those two couldn't get along.
Right.
So if you get rid of one, to me, you didn't have to get rid of the other.
That's true. But I think there was an element of, we lost this kid and we can't get him back. And I don't know if that was culture as much as it was organization, because remember, they didn't want to pay him. So that was going to be a sour point.
But that was a different ownership, right?
Same GM. And DeAndre Ayton is clearly one of those guys that, you know, clearly he can drift. He can come and he can go. And that wasn't, and he's not necessarily the type of dude that's going to be defensively inclined and be happy not getting the ball. Like, I don't think that necessarily was going to work. It doesn't mean you go out and get expensive ass Brad Beal. It doesn't mean that you put Yusuf Nurkic on an island and you don't have any other big man, and you go get Drew Eubanks, whose, I guess, greatest value was getting hit in the face and then calling the cops. You know what I mean? Like, these things are not what makes a championship team. Like you said, I don't know how disappointing they are, because I never thought it would work to begin with. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel like KD, for as great as KD is, J.A., he needs a system to, like, sort of accentuate the things that he does best. Like, KD can cook you from 35 feet, but that's not the greatest usage of his talent at 35, going on 36 years old. You need someone to create offense for him so he can just go and be Kevin Durant.
So the thing with KD, you know, he turns 36 next year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting a little long in the tooth. So I was mm-hmm. looking up, like, guys who won finals MVPs at this age. MJ won his last at 35. Kareem mm-hmm. had that one at age 37
yep.
in 1985. But generally, you don't see guys this age lead teams to championships. So in that sense, you know, there's a press. You could argue that guys like what LeBron and Steph Curry are doing have kind of shifted the or extended the window, right, of greatness right. later. It's certainly guys are playing greater longer, right? But it's still telling that we don't see guys this age lead teams to a championship, which adds to the urgency. I will remind people that, you know, this was the first iteration of this team. I think similar to Milwaukee, right? It's the first iteration of this team. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's catastrophic if you didn't win a championship in year one. LeBron never won a championship in year one in, you know, Miami or back to Cleveland or back or out to L.A. It rarely happens. It happened for the Celtics, right?
Right.
With the big three. It technically happened for the Lakers when Anthony Davis got there and joined LeBron, and they won a championship that year, but that was a bubble year. And I tend not to discount the bubble championship, but I think in this case, it's relevant in that you had a new team that got an extra 4 months in the middle of the season to get to know you. I don't know how much they played together or got to know each other during those four
right,
months.
Right.
I know it certainly benefited LeBron to have a 4 month break for his body.
Yes, it did
that year, but that's, as much as anything, I'm going to say that bubble thing doesn't count in that it was a first-year team that won a championship.
I tend to agree with you because, yeah, it usually takes time. But if it's built on a flawed premise, all it's going to be is a flawed premise going into year two. Like Bradley Beal becoming older and more expensive, Kevin Durant becoming older and more expensive. And the other thing for me with these guys is if you're not scoring, tell me what else you're doing. Like with Chris Bosh, Chris Bosh was a really good defender, floor spacer, all that stuff. LeBron, the greatest all-around player in the league at the peak of his powers. Dwayne Wade, really good defender, especially before his knees gave out. Slasher could get out on the break. Like those guys did different things if they were not the offensive focal point. And because Kevin Durant and Devin Booker both like operating in the mid-range, they're occupying the same space on the floor. Neither guy is necessarily going to be the floor spacer. And when Kevin Durant was the floor spacer, he complained that he was just standing in the corner. And then you hire a coach in Frank Vogel, who inevitably is going to walk the plank, of course, right? Because coaches are going to walk the plank. That isn't offensively inclined to create a system that accentuates or at least hides the weaknesses and flaws, you know, of the roster. So there's a lot going on there.
And speaking of Vogel, you know, it's funny. Yeah, he was kind of saying the same stuff. I was like, look, it's not supposed to happen. As he said after the game, he's like, you know, we put this team together with the 3 to 5 year plan in mind. And I'm thinking like, are you going to be around for those 3 to 5 years?
Right.
You know, like we, like, I'm not sure this is a we. I'm not sure we should be using first
like
person plural
we?
Pronouns right here. We?
We?
We.
We.
So. Yeah, it's a lot of questions. And Vogel, he was out of sorts. Like in one of the first two games, I think it was game one, he just looked so discombobulated on the sidelines there in Minnesota. And that's not him. You know,
right.
Vogel always had like almost an undeserved swag. Like from the get-go, when he took over in Indiana, he kind of had this swag to him. Like,
Yeah, like a cocky thing. Yeah,
yeah. I'm like, you don't have like the resume or the credentials necessarily that, but I liked it. And he wore it well and it worked, right? Especially worked in LA. He won a championship with LeBron and Anthony Davis. So, but he was out of character. That's one of the tests of the playoffs. Like, can you remain true to yourself? Mm-hmm. And Frank Vogel didn't seem like the Frank Vogel that I knew. Like maybe the stress was getting to him, maybe the pressure was getting to him. But so another thing about timing and switching us back to the Timberwolves, though, my only question is, you know, I don't think they're ready to win a championship. It's hard to go from not winning a playoff series to winning a championship. That right. rarely happens. Boston right. was another year with that exception where they didn't win a championship the year before, or they didn't win a playoff series the year before. I wonder about the timeline of this team because, you know, Anthony Edwards is only 22, which means he's not ready to lead a team to a championship historically. But Conley's getting up there and Gobert is getting up there. So two of your starters, I'm not sure, align with the timeline of the core of this team. Two very important players who I'm not sure are set up for to be valuable contributors when this team is going to be ready to win a championship.
Well, and they're up against the luxury tax aprons and you got the ownership situation. You know, the battle right now that's going on between Glenn Taylor and, you know, the A-Rod.
What do you think about A-Rod showing up at the game after Taylor's basically been calling him broke?
Brokey. That, like,
putting it out there with your broke ass. He's like, yeah, you know, like, he didn't put it out there directly, but, you know, clearly they're putting it out there like, yeah, he wanted to come in and strip the roster down because he broke, which is why he's behind on payments. Because he can't afford it.
You own the welfare.
With Eddie Murphy, he can't afford
that's,
it.
That's Eddie Murphy Raw. Delirious. That's the one we can't watch anymore because it's got things that get people canceled nowadays in it, but it's still funny as hell.
It's funny because I did rewatch it and I was like, I think it was on Netflix or something. And I remember the problematic parts. What I didn't remember was that's how he started it off. I was like, oh wow, you know, you ain't been on tour in a couple years, like, this is what you had to get off your mind, you had to go there. I'm like, yeah, this would not work in 2024. In the 80s you'd get away with that, but like, wow, to start it off like that, no.
I do want to see Eddie. I do want to see if Eddie Murphy's got anything on tour. Like, I heard he was in the comedy clubs a couple years ago just putting out material, just seeing if he could hit anything, and I was just like, I want to hear Eddie back to the stage. I don't know if you're gonna get Eddie back to the stage, but I got a weird one for you, J.A., because while we're on the topic with the KD, if I'm the Golden State Warriors, right, and you can know where I'm going with this, if I'm the Golden State Warriors and you want to keep the Golden Girls around, why don't you try to get that old thing back, right? I would call them and say, hey, what would it take to get Kevin Durant? It would be completely unrealistic. I know it doesn't make sense. You got the Draymond thing over there, right? You know, but Draymond can't afford to tell KD, leave, we'll win without you. No, you can't say that no more.
I mean, they already did their podcast, right? Like, I don't know if he came on KD's podcast or KD came on his.
But I think,
like,
KD came on his podcast.
They podcasted it out. So I don't think it would be a problem. It wouldn't be a problem.
I don't
think it would work. Like, can you really try to recreate 2018 and 2025?
You ain't got to recreate 2018. You ain't got to try to recreate that because you are far and away better than everybody else. Now you just trying to keep up. You trying to keep up with Oklahoma City. You trying to keep up with Minnesota. You trying to keep up with Denver. Desperate time calls for desperate measures, right? Now, before we go to break, we're going to hit one more series. And John, give me that Oregon. Give me that New York Knicks Oregon because I felt like I heard the Oregon in Philadelphia yesterday because the Knicks fans, they hopped on the Acela or they got in their whips. They came and took over Philadelphia yesterday. And I never thought Philadelphia of all places would get its arena taken over. This series is ugly and it's chippy. Like, Joel Embiid is quietly, like, I love 90s basketball, so don't take this the wrong way, Philly fans. But Joel Embiid is out here compiling a bunch of wrong place, wrong time hits on folks. He got Brunson in the chops yesterday, which I think might have woken up Jalen Brunson. Mitchell Robinson, he got him. Who did he step on? Josh Hart's leg yesterday? Was it someone else's leg? Was it Precious Achiuwa's leg or something like that? He's compiling a Draymond Green-esque sort of.
He did have a Draymond kick in one of the other games.
Hey, dudes who kick dudes in the nether regions, ain't no place for that. Like, you need to have a talk with, like, your daddy about that type of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, that's stuff that you learn growing up.
So, and then for him to be wreaking all that havoc and to also go in on the Philly fans, like, he didn't have to. The question was posed to him. It's not like he went out of his way to bring it up. But once it was brought up, he had lots to say about it. Unlike Nick Nurse, who I thought took the practical approach and was like, you know, I'm not like Nick Nurse got too many other things to deal with and to worry about the fan
like being
ratio.
Outcoached.
Right. You know, so I think a little bit too much is being made of, oh, the Knicks fans were taking over. Fans don't determine, you know, the outcome of playoff
series. Oh, no. It's just the visual and it just adds to the scene. No, I get that.
So my thing on the Knicks, what's really impressed me about them is that the Knicks don't have the highest ceiling of any team in the playoffs, but they do have the highest floor.
Mm.
And I think that's proven to be pretty valuable because what it's shown is that they can withstand the lulls that everyone has, right? And you're not going to put them away while they're having their lull. It's just too hard for them to be put away because they're going to crash the boards and get offensive rebounds and second chance shots. They're going to create turnovers on the other end. So limit your opportunities to pull away from them because they're going to get some stops on that end. And so it enables them to stay in games and release the pressure because they don't have to be as efficient, right? So much of the modern NBA is built on efficiency. The Knicks can beat you without being efficient because they're going to get second and third and even fourth chance scoring opportunities. And you're not going to be efficient against them.
Right.
So, you know, like each possession doesn't feel like it matters. You know, their opponent, like the Sixers feel like, oh, you better score right here. And the Knicks, you're like, if they don't score here, they either get the offensive rebound or they'll come back with the score being the same the next time they get the ball because you're not going to score at the other end. So I think that creates that has changed the way I think about their playoff potential because you can stick around and then things might happen like at the end of game two when, you know, they overcome a 5-point deficit in the last 30 seconds because you can't put them away.
Well, here's the thing about this. For whatever reason, like you said, the age of efficiency, it devalued offensive rebounding. It valued getting back on defense and setting your defense, which means you're not, I guess, because there's a low rate of return on going to the glass offensively compared to giving up potentially a fast break bucket. But when you saw the Knicks repeatedly hit the glass, getting extra possessions, even if they didn't score, J.A., I felt like they were taking Philly's spirit. Like in the whole they wanted it more thing, it feels really weird to say because we've seen plenty of instances where you know what it looks like. They really wanted it more than the Knicks did yesterday. I mean, than the 76ers did yesterday, excuse me. Like that was kind of disheartening to see. And Josh Hart didn't shoot well, right? But he grabbed like a million rebounds after hitting like four threes in three straight games. He couldn't hit anything but decided to go to the boards. Deuce McBride, who I don't even think people knew whether he could really play before the RJ Barrett trade. You know what I mean? And then you put OG Anunoby on Joel Embiid. And it worked out. Like Tibbs is pushing the right buttons. I wasn't sure if he was like a great playoff coach because I thought he coached 82 playoff games.
Right.
It's
translating. That's the thing. Like, because my whole thing is like, yeah, they're going to beat you in the regular season when you're trying really hard. You know, and the other team is on a third game and they're on a third game of five nights back to back, you know, maybe hit the city in New York last night, whatever. But like, no, it's making a difference in the playoffs. Like my thing in the playoffs, like, well, everybody's trying hard. Philly's trying hard. Right. I don't think, you know, you're hitting Joe Embiid's out there giving it all. Like Maxie's running around. Like it's not like they're being out efforted, but they're also just basics, box out. Can you box somebody out? You know, like, that's why I don't want to hear about, oh, the missed calls at the end of the game two, you know, and even the NBA acknowledged that the referees missed calls and that. But you know what? Box out Hartenstein and it doesn't matter, right? Just box out. And they're not doing those basic things like boxing out. So, like, that's not even about wanting it more. That's just about, like, okay, who's going to just be smarter and take care of the little details? That's what it is, right? It's not about heart and desire. The playoffs are about the details. Who's going to take care of the details? And the Knicks are worrying about the details to an extent that the Sixers are not.
Well, and that's the thing. It's the details. And it's, you know, Nick, not just Nick Nurse, but Kyle Lowry. If you don't have anybody to inbound the ball to in game two, you call a timeout. You send everybody else calling a timeout. Kyle Lowry's the vet and the champion. Since when that we remove culpability from that player who's inbounding the ball, who's standing right next to the ref and listening to the ref count off 1-1,000, 2-1,000. Call a damn timeout. Like, this is not rocket science to me. Everybody in Philly on that roster seems to panic. Like, Tyrese Maxey plays very fast, so it looks like he panics. Nick Nurse always looks like he's panicking. Kyle Lowry is going to throw his body into somebody because he's panicking. Joel Embiid, who can't seem to hit a bucket in the fourth quarter, right? And it has to be said with the caveat, Jay, that this guy's coming off a major, I'll say major, you know, like a knee procedure. And he's clearly not healthy.
And he's still Bell's palsy.
And Bell's
palsy.
When's
the last time you saw that in the playoff injury update? Bell's palsy?
Not never, right? Not never. So he's playing through all this. And he doesn't have gas in the fourth quarter. Like, he's clearly wearing down. But it looks like Philly, it looks like once again, the 76ers are going to do what they've always done when they blow something in the playoffs. They're going to fire Doc Rivers at the end of this.
Oh, man. And get rid of Ben Simmons. They're going to blame it on Ben Simmons and Doc, right?
And James Harden. Don't forget him, too. Everybody else is going to get the blame. And when we come on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the Lakers and Nuggets, and we're also going to talk about the Clippers and Mavs. You're listening to The Good Word on Yahoo Sports. Back on The Good Word with J.A. Adande. Jay, before we get into Lakers, Nuggets, like, we can't talk about the Bucks and Pacers because Bobby Portis gets himself thrown out of games. Dame and Giannis were not playing. Now they're down 3-1. We can't even really blame Doc Rivers for this one. People will, but we can't really blame Doc Rivers for this one. Can't really talk about the Cavs and Magic because I want Donovan Mitchell to show up so bad for them, but now I'm starting to think...
That's actually starting to get me interested in that series, which I have not been paying attention to.
Really?
But now the fact that you know, I always say the playoffs are about revelation and redemption, and it's about time for some Donovan Mitchell redemption. So I'm a little bit curious. I might even, you know, turn to NBA TV and watch a few minutes to see if Donovan Mitchell can redeem himself because he's got some redeeming to do.
Not just redeeming to do. There's questions that everybody there has to ask themselves if they don't win this series against an Orlando Magic team that's really, really young and really, really active. Is that there? Not really much to talk about with the Celtics and Heat because after the Heat went bombs away in game two, they came back down to earth, and when you're missing DeLon Wright, Josh Richardson, Jimmy Butler, Terry Rozier, they don't have enough good players. They don't have enough great players, right? Boston should dispose of that series in five games, I would think. And we don't have to talk about the Thunder and the Pelicans because the Pelicans never decide to show up. Cool. Now,
see you in Galveston.
Yeah. See you in Galveston. Look, don't get the beehive on me, man. Don't get the beehive on me in here. They will show up. Now, Jay, I'm in Denver, and there's a game five tonight, Lakers-Nuggets. I don't know if you agree with me on this theory. This isn't related to this series in particular, but just in playoff basketball as a whole. There comes a point in every series, competitive series, usually it happens in game four, where both teams know who the better team is, and both teams realize who's going to win the series. Those two teams may not be the same teams. You may realize, oh, they're the better team, but we're going to beat them, right? I feel like that's happened in the Clippers-Mavs series. We ain't really got to worry about this in the Nuggets-Lakers series because that series is over, right? The series is over, right, J.A.?
Yeah. Okay. Although, just by cracking the window open a little bit or the door, whatever, you know, portal you want to use, you know, the fact that Jamal Murray now is questionable. You know, this is why you want to get rid of things and you know, close these series out. Right. Don't play with your food. So, you know, like I was glad that Timberwolves Sun series ended because, you know, people were rolling ankles and then the coach got hurt. Like, I watched Anthony Edwards roll his ankles a couple times. Like, yeah, we need to get this over. We don't need the Ant-Man getting hurt. You know, I didn't realize the coach was going to get taken out.
Right.
But yeah, end these series early so that you're not susceptible to injury. In this case, it's funny because, like, LeBron doesn't believe, you can tell, he's not, you know, giving all these platitudes like, oh, you know, we can do it. Just like when I came back 3-1 against Warriors in the finals. It's just like he's not saying that. This ain't that. You know, now ain't then. Right.
Right.
But at least he cares. You know, when he was going off because they didn't review that out of bounds call.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was like, you know what? At least he hasn't checked out. He was screaming and had a little tantrum. But I'm like, that's a good sign. At least he hasn't checked out. But intellectually, he doesn't believe. But at least he's still emotionally invested. But it's just so funny to see him in interviews because just he's not like trying to fool himself. He knows what he's up against and he knows what the Lakers have and don't have. What interested me, though, Vinny, was like, especially in game 3, and I think this was the key adjustment that they made for game 4 because it was what cost them in all the first 3 games. They were acting like the young Bulls instead of the old Bulls. And if you don't know that story, it's a very simple exchange. You know, 2 Bulls are sitting up the top of the hill and there's a bunch of cows down at the bottom of the hill. And the young Bull says, hey, I'm going to run down the hill and get with one of these cows. And the old Bull says, I'm going to walk down the hill and get with them all, you know, and the different phrases used maybe,
depending on who's
telling the story and what the setting is. But right. I'll use the cleaned up version. But the Lakers are coming out like the young Bulls, especially in game 3. They're back at home. Like LeBron was running all over. They're jumping in the passing lane. Remember LeBron gets that breakaway and like he could have passed it up. You know, he had his teammate there with him. I think it was Achimura, but he was like, no, I'm going to take this in and dunk it and get the crowd all fired up. Like, you're expending all that energy, LeBron, mm-hmm. in the first 2 minutes of the game, and they didn't have nothing left in the fourth quarter. Game 4, you notice Darvin took LeBron out in the first quarter. You know, they weren't flying around in the first quarter. It kind of took a while to get into that game, but then they still had something left, and they were able to withstand the Denver push that time. So you wonder if they've learned maybe just not a little bit too late. But they kept it open, and you never know what might happen, right? And it also, does it make you wonder about the Nuggets going forward? Let's presume the Nuggets do win this. Are they showing vulnerabilities to you?
I don't think that they will be beaten, but I think they are beatable, if that makes sense. They're not this invincible juggernaut. Like you can say, and they're missing a lot of open threes. But they're missing open threes. Like, and it's continued to such a point that you have questions. Even Jamal Murray hit the game winner in game 2, and he took over late. But overall, he has not played particularly well. And Austin Reeves has done a good job on him. But Austin Reeves should not be able to do a good job on Jamal Murray. He should have Austin Reeves for lunch. And the only guy that Denver is looking at and saying, okay, you're going to have a game every game is Nikola Jokic, right? That's the only guy. Aaron Gordon had a game in game 3. Was Casper the friendly ghost in game 4?
And it doesn't feel like Jokic is dominating. He's still getting his triple doubles, but it doesn't feel like, oh man, he's just like overpowering
putting his force
on the court. But it's crazy that like, you know, he can go 29-10-10, you know, and you're just kind of like, which actually I think that was Luka's stats the last game, but like, you know, Jokic is putting up similar numbers and you're just like, well, another triple double, you know, ho-hum.
Right.
Like we're almost taking it for granted at this point, but we do know at the end they'll have the best player on the floor in any series that they're in, you know, and everyone else is experienced, right? You know, like, but they do need to elevate their game, I think, because like this level, I'm not sure we'll get it done going forward.
Well, if they're playing Minnesota, they're going to play Minnesota the next round. I don't know if Minnesota is smart and savvy enough to beat Denver, right? I think they're talented enough. I think they're active enough. I think it will make out for a great series. Unless...
Will they be confident enough now? Knowing how they played against them last year.
Right.
Knowing that, okay, we're older and wiser now, and we've got a playoff series under our belts now. I think that could make a difference now. Like, it's funny. Maybe 48 hours ago, I would have just written that series. I would have just, you know, moved Denver on into the conference finals. I'm not so sure right now.
Well, the one thing about Minnesota is that, A, they have size. And Karl Towns, even though he's not a traditional center, and I wouldn't want to play him a lot of minutes at center, even, you know, with Rudy Gobert, whenever Rudy Gobert sits, size does account for something. In today's
game.
In
length, too.
In length.
Jaden McDaniels. you know, and Edwards like on the perimeter.
I like Jaden McDaniels.
He's been a revelation.
Yes.
He's been a revelation. I was like, oh, okay. This is something that I didn't account for when I was looking at the Timberwolves.
Look, the greatest lineup. No, see, I was going to insult somebody again, and I'm not going to insult that person again, J.A. Dande. See, I'm growing, I'm maturing. I'm not going to insult Scottie Pippen today. See, y'all. I was thinking about it. My best friend's probably listening to me right now, like, why you got to go after Scottie? But I didn't say nothing about Scottie today. I'm letting Scottie be. But Jaden McDaniels plays with like length, activity, athleticism, and he's not like trying to get in the way and trying to, you know, commandeer the offense when he shouldn't. Like, he's letting the game come to him. I really like that. And Denver just as a whole, I need to see secondary scores without, let's just say, Jokic getting it off the glass. Jokic getting you one of your misses, tapping it to himself. Like, they need to create secondary offense, and I don't see it, especially if Murray isn't doing it. Like, Aaron Gordon, he's your fourth best player, but you don't want him trying to create offense because none of the other guys are doing it.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting a lot of garbage points. Somebody made the good comparison of Aaron Gordon as like a Cedric Ceballos type, you know, which was, you know, I might have been on Inside the NBA, but, you know, I think that's a good comp for him.
That is.
His willingness to become that was so important as well. I don't know. I still like the way they've been built. What I like about them and what teams should try to emulate, we talked about, you know, this intense desire and need to win in year one, and, you know, your failure if you didn't. This is year 9 for the Nuggets, basically, with Jokic and Murray and Mike Malone. So, you know, they were starting to ascend. They got derailed for a couple of years with the Murray injury. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they had their core and they put the right pieces around. You know, they've done a great job assembling that roster, and they've stayed the course. You know, they didn't panic and fire Mike Malone when they maybe left the playoffs a little earlier than they wanted to or thought they should have.
Right.
So, I mean, we always talk about it's a copycat league, but then nobody copies what the champions are doing. Just, you know, and it is, I mean, obviously the most unrepeatable thing is getting an MVP and all-time great in the second round.
Right.
Like, you're not going to do that. But just think of what you can do with a high draft pick. You know, if they can do it with a second-round pick, you should be able to find a core piece, you know, if you're picking in the lottery or picking at the top of the lottery, and slowly build rather than try to do it the Suns way and put it all together at once and, you know, in a flawed premise.
Well, look, the team that they're playing, think about the Lakers. There's always this urgency because you have LeBron James on your team. If LeBron James had a Jamal Murray in a year where Jamal Murray was out with an ACL, would he have been the teammate that said, okay, let's be patient, let's ride this out? Or would it have been ship his ass out of here? When Michael Porter Jr., whose back was flagged in the draft and everything else, right? His microphone should be flagged for all the crazy shit he's talking about right now on podcast. But Michael Porter Jr.'s back being flagged, would LeBron or any one of these other sort of we got to win now type guys have said, hey, let's ride this out? Or would they say, hey, let's trade this guy and get somebody who's a veteran player, an expensive player, an older player who can help me win now? That's not the league that we're in anymore. So, yeah, continuity does work, but continuity ain't sexy. You know what I mean? That's not sexy anymore, J.A. Speaking of continuity, this might be the last go-round for the L.A. Clippers as we know it, right? Kawhi Leonard is out. The two games that he's out, the Clippers have won. Game 4 Sunday afternoon, that was one of the best displays of shot creation, shot making that I think I've ever seen between Kyrie and some of his exploits. Luka, who was sort of dragging out the rear, like Luka was actually the dude that was like, hey, Luka, we kind of need you today. And you had Paul George, who decided to turn into Paul George again. And James Harden, who floated you to death. Like, that was, J.A., to me, that was like, oh, this is why we think of the Clippers as a team that can challenge someone in a playoff series of note.
In a playoff series, but you can't win a championship without Kawhi Leonard, and so they need to get him back, you know, if not this series and the next series, if they advance. But we've also seen that Harden and Paul George can't play like that if Kawhi's on the floor. like if you could just do that, if they could have just done that, even with limited Kawhi in games 2 and 3, you know, they'd be sitting pretty right now instead of, you know, and still in a dogfight to get out of this series. I also thought it was plain disrespectful to not double James Harden at all in the fourth quarter.
That was weird, wasn't it?
I get it. Jason Kidd said later, like, we just did not want to give up threes. Like, I went back and rewatched all of his buckets in the fourth quarters, and there's a couple times, like,
everybody Luka stayed home.
Yeah, he didn't want to come off Terrence Mann in the corner, whatever. But my thing was, like, all the other guys had started to cool down, right? Like,
right,
putting up threes in the fourth quarter of a close game when you're on the verge of blowing a 30-point lead, you know, it's a little different than when you're playing free and easy and Kawhi's out and like, hey, let's just go chuck it in the first quarter, which is what happened for them in the first quarter. So, like, I'm not letting James Harden just, you know, get past his man again and again and again and get into the lane for those floaters. I was like, man, I realized it wasn't that long ago when he was finishing the top five or MVP race 5 out of 6 years. You know, the last was in 2020. I was thinking, like, the bulk of his time was in the last decade, but it hasn't been a full decade since he was one of the guys in the league. And he showed very much he still has some of that in him. Now, it was an elimination game, you know.
Right.
We don't want to bring up his elimination game stats, but it was on the verge of elimination. If they lose this game, they're down 3-1, and you can, you know, pack up and, you know, start shipping your stuff over to the Intuit Dome and clear out your locker room in the Staples Center, crypto.com arena. So, if they get in that situation again, I'm sorry. I'm sending a double, and it's going to have to be Terrence Mann or Norm Powell or somebody else beat me. I'm not letting a former MVP just repeatedly get where he wants to go in the fourth quarter.
And not just that. You could tell Jason Kidd was, like, thinking three-point brain the entire time because he had Maxi Kleber on the floor, as opposed to Gafford or Derek Lively II. Both of those guys are shot blockers. Maxie's a three-point shooter. So he was thinking, I need space on the offensive end, and I need to keep the Clippers from exploiting space on defense. And the Clippers were just happy to take those twos. Harden was happy to just go down the lane, float something up. Like, once he got in a rhythm, it's good to see that Harden, in a moment's notice, can recognize, oh, I've got something going here. Let me not overthink this. Because I think that's what his problem is in those situations where he just, you know, when he goes full James Harden. I think he literally, J.A., just overthinks it, like paralysis by analysis, and he checks himself out because he is too much information overload. This one, he kept it simple. And I don't know if you can do that. Is he going to have the ball that much if Kawhi Leonard is there? That's why I think they need to keep Kawhi on the shelf until he's, like, good. If that means he's not good, that means he ain't good.
If and when he comes back, though, I'm running the same offense. And then you really are in a quandary defensively because, you know, instead of Terrence Mann or Norm Powell, like, do you leave Kawhi to double James Harden? So I'm making it a more difficult decision. To me, like, I would definitely leave these other guys, you know, and double James Harden. I'm not so sure I'm leaving Kawhi, even this Kawhi. I think he can knock down an open three, you know, if you're not asking him to move a lot. So I would keep this offense Harden-centric right now. And part of the Harden defers a little too much. You know, right. I thought he deferred too much to Embiid when he played with Embiid. He was better off when Embiid didn't play in that Sixers Celtics series last
year.
Right. And I think he defers too much, you know, when Kawhi is out there. And I think Paul George defers too much when Kawhi's out. So here's my question with Paul George, because, like, that first half, it felt like he was playing for that max contract. And it felt like he looked very max contract worthy.
Mm-hmm.
In the second half, with the exception of that crazy corner three that he hit, would you give him, like, I guess after that game, if we're going to make it a one-game referendum, based on that game, would you give Paul George a max contract?
It depends on how many of the max contracts I got on my team.
Well, the Clippers, you know, they already got Kawhi max-ish. Harden's going to want something max-ish. You know, I think they've said they'll go max-ish with Paul George, but I think Paul George is like max.
Yeah, but the crazy thing is, if Kawhi sets the tone, if Kawhi's the best player on the team and he doesn't take a max, you can't take a max, right? And if I'm Paul George,
it doesn't mean you can't. Since when is logic ever dictated? Like, and which is logic and humility and deference? Like, are those adjectives that you frequently apply to NBA players?
No, it's not. It's not. Like make it make sense? No, it never makes sense. It's illogical. If I'm Paul George, the question I have is, if he's your third best player on a championship team, that is the perfect place for him to be, because you don't need that person every night. And what that third guy does is like fill in the blanks. You know what I mean? Playmaking, spot up shooting, all those things.
And again, it gets back to, in my mind, what a big three should be, is that any one of them is capable of being your best player. Like, he was the best player on the court in the first half, or much of the first half.
Right.
You know, like, that's what you want out of big three. Like, any one of these three guys can explode and be your main guy.
It's just, it's so weird and funky, because, like, you don't realize that these guys are old, because they all kind of look the same. Like, Paul George taking the Indiana Pacers to the Eastern Conference Finals, that was 11 years ago. And he's had a couple
major
of
injuries since then.
A couple of devastating injuries since then. Like, that's even the Kevin Durant thing, where we say, oh yeah, he's old, but he's had an MCL, he's had an Achilles. Like, it's not just age, it's the atrophy, it's the rehab, it's those things you wind up paying a price for. It, and you usually pay a price on the back end, when you should be kind of in like cruise control on the back half of your career. Like, that's even Kawhi Leonard, where we're going to look at him and say, man, it's a marvel that he plays 16 years on a bad body, as opposed to saying, man, we can't depend on Kawhi Leonard. We're going to look at it and say, damn, Kawhi Leonard played that long?
So here's the thing, you know, and I think this applies to, as you look around the whole landscape of the NBA. So Kawhi Leonard played, I think it was 68 games, most games he's played in 7 years this year, yep, in the regular season.
Yep.
And then he broke down at the end, and now he's not available in the playoffs. And so I think you really have to ask, you know, the NBA was really pushing back against load management this year with the 65 game, you know, minimum threshold for awards and all that other stuff that they've done to really make it clear, like, hey, we want our guys invested in the regular season. They've also tried to create new inventory for their potential TV partners, you know, by adding the play-in tournament,
yep,
and these the play-in tournament and the in-season tournament.
Yep.
You know, so all these extra games. Don't forget, it's been less than 20 years, or maybe 20 years exactly, since they added and expanded the first round of playoffs from best of five to best of seven. So all these extra games now. And then we saw, because of the play-in tournament, we lost Jimmy Butler. We lost Zion Williamson. We've lost Kawhi Leonard. So is it worth it emphasizing the regular season, making sure guys are on the court in the regular season, having these extra games like the play-in tournament, if it's going to cost star players for the playoffs?
I feel like that's six in one half, half dozen in the other. Because you look at Zion. Zion gets hurt because he gets hurt. Jimmy Butler gets hurt because he gets
right,
hurt.
But right? If it had been the old way, you know, they were the seventh seed, right? Like, they would have been in, they wouldn't have had to play that game. And Zion, maybe Zion doesn't get hurt.
Agreed. But are you willing to sacrifice the last 6 weeks of the regular season and turn it back into a tank fest?
I mean, I like what the in-season tournament did for games in November and December. It brought some energy and urgency to those games. I've ultimately liked what the play-in tournament has done, right?
Unintended but consequences is the term that Adam Silver likes
using. At the expense of the NBA playoffs, which I revere, right? I like, yes, these other things. It's been a pleasant surprise.
Yep.
I love the NBA playoffs. This is my favorite sporting event. March Madness is great, but this is, as Walt Riley used to say, the highest level of hoop. And, you know, that it's been diminished that we don't have Giannis, right, and Dame and Zion and Jimmy Butler and Kawhi. It's a severely diminished version of the NBA playoffs. And there's been a lot of compelling stuff that's happened, but it's, think about what it could be, right? Think about if this Pacers Bucks series was what we could see. If we saw this young Bucks or young Pacers team pushing up against the full Milwaukee Bucks, right? Yeah. So, like,
yeah,
we have to ask what we value. And I've always been of the, you know, like, okay, I'm not going to emphasize the regular season that much because the playoffs are what matter. And we I think tried to tilt it too far the other way.
Right.
And these playoffs are not what they could be. You know, and think about it now. We're really looking at the prospect of the second round and beyond of the NBA playoffs with no LeBron, no KD, no Devin Booker, no Giannis, no Dame Lillard, no Kawhi, you know, Steph Curry's at the crib. Like, you know, it's the passing of the torch, but man, we got some, look at the jersey sales, look at the social media video views, like all those top 10s that we see in those categories, we're not going to be seeing in the latter rounds of these playoffs.
Everybody can't go. Everybody can't come along. Some people going to wind up being left behind. And yeah, like you said, Jay, it has to be a passing of the torch. Like, they have to get off of Steph and KD and LeBron. They've been bankable, but you got to introduce new stars. And the fact that the new stars are taking it from the old stars, that's the best way you can possibly do it. You got to have Anthony Edwards in here somewhere. Maybe you got to have Tyrese Halliburton in here somewhere. They want to emphasize sometimes the smaller markets. You want to also have the establishments in there. Like, they want to feed everybody, but that's not what this is made for. The second round only has 8 teams. So only 8 people are going to be sometimes happy. That means sometimes Steph can't go. That means sometimes maybe Luka or Paul George or Kyrie, somebody's going to lose in that series. But I don't. The only one that I'm going to be a little disappointed at is the Bucks-Pacers thing. Not that because the Pacers aren't deserving, but you do want to see Giannis in the second round. And it would have been cool to see Giannis and Dame potentially against the New York Knicks and watch how that goes. And however goes, you know, the Orlando-Cleveland thing. Like, we all know how that stuff works. So, but that, ladies and gentlemen, is J.A. Adande. You can always catch him on ESPN on Around the Horn. And of course, he is I keep forgetting your title, the Director of Sports Journalism at Northwestern University, Medill School of Journalism. Of course, he's a former columnist at the L.A. Times. J.A., really appreciate you, my man. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works so hard behind the scenes. Dan will be back tomorrow for another episode of Divine Intervention. I'll be back on Wednesday for another episode of The Good Word. If you haven't listened to Stevie Wonder in the 70s, go do that and report back. Until then, everybody be safe.